Let's Pod This. My name is Andy Moore. Friends, it's good to be with you again on a sunny Friday afternoon. I hope the storms didn't wake you up too much this morning. I was already awake because my kid woke up at 2 a.m. and I've lived a whole day before I got to the point of recording this show. I think last week we really did a recap of what happened at the end of the legislative session with the veto overrides. Governor Stitt calling out Senator Rossino's, alleging his wife was somehow involved in the Department of Mental Health scandal. I'm happy to report that the governor has apologized to Senator Rossino and his wife for those comments. He said he just let his emotions get the best of him. And as it turns out, that has been a theme of the week. As you may know, as I'm certain listeners know, yesterday the president of the United States, Donald Trump, and Elon Musk, who's not the president, got into a spat, I think a little relationship spat on the Twitter, on the internet, and it got ugly quickly. At the point that the public became aware, it was already very ugly, for his part, Elon Musk alleges that Donald Trump is close, or like is in the Epstein files. Jeffrey Epstein, a convicted child molester, I guess, is the best way to phrase it. Trump says that he's going to cancel all of Musk's contracts. So far today, on Friday, they're still not speaking. I can't imagine being in the press having to ask the president, do you plan to call Elon on the phone today? Because that's not what they went to school for, right? Maybe it is. I don't know. Anyway, there's a theme emerging, I've noticed, over the last week of really emotional men in high-powered positions, emoting all over democracy, I guess is a way to phrase it. And that is clearly not a conversation that I can have by myself as a man. I mean, I could, but no one wants to hear that conversation. So I have a guest with us today. My friend and yours, a friend of the pod, a former guest, and one of our founding board members here at the very beginning of Let's Fix This, a civic hero in my mind, our friend Effie Rourke. Hello, Effie. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, good to be back on the pod.
Effie is taking the time. She's driving to spend the weekend at the lake, and she is in the car. She's not driving. She's riding in the car and is willing to have a conversation with us. So, Effie, you and I were texting about this, and it really kind of came to a head of just like, why there's a very clear dichotomy, right? Of like, society says women are too emotional. Not all of society, some parts of society, namely men, say that women are too emotional and too emotional to be in public office, to be president. And yet here we have that very thing happening with men. I'm shocked, I tell you, shocked to see this happen. And I don't even know where to start, Effie. I don't know. You, as the woman of this dyad today, lead me.
Yeah, you know, I think what's happening, everybody saw coming from about 10 miles away. It's happening in perhaps a more dramatic and spectacularly destructive way than any of us thought that it might. But I noticed just yesterday online, as funny and dark as all of this is, that the punchline of the joke keeps being that they're acting like women, and they keep getting compared to the Real Housewives. And yeah. even AOC sort of made a joke about like the girls are fighting. This is not how women act. Men need to own that this is how men act.
Yeah, that's right.
This is two men who've never, megalomaniacs, right? They've never been told no in their whole lives. And it's playing out in very public fashion. I don't know what happens next. It's anybody's guess.
Right. I think that's a really interesting point, Effie. And I've seen, a few dozen different memes that have kind of said this, made this allegory, right? Saying either that these two men are acting like two women, which is immensely disparaging to women, or the other jokes that like, this is such a, like the gayest thing that could possibly happen during Pride Month. And then I've seen a few, memes push back saying like, that's disparaging to gays. Like, just because someone's emotional doesn't make them bad. And if we're going to frame everything in this lens, then it's going to be hurtful to somebody. And who is left not being held accountable? The emotional men in power positions of power.
Yep. Yep. The emotional men in positions of power. That's right. Well, I think too that, you know, this is as many funny turns as this could take, and it could take some really funny paths, right? We are in a real life episode of Beat. This could, it could go any number of directions, and there are certainly plenty of jokes to be made, but I just don't love that the punchline so far seems to be that they're acting like emotional.
Right, right, because it's, they're not. They're acting like emotional men, which is what you said, right? Like, they're very clear yep. that's the way it goes. Yeah, I'm so with you. And I think, you know, you mentioned AOC's comments. She was one of the first videos I saw when, you know, reporters just kind of caught her on the steps of the building and asked her. And I couldn't tell if she, like, meant it genuinely in the way that, like, is common parlance, or if she was trying to, like, feed into this narrative of, like, oh, I know what you guys are going to say, is they're fighting like girls, right? But either way, it does risk, like, that message getting out there and, like, perpetuating this stereotype that women are too emotional when mm-hmm. that is distinctly not what's happening. And I would, you know, to go back to the state legislature, right? We saw the governor, a man, become so emotional about them overriding his vetoes and about them ousting his appointee that he got emotional and dragged in Senator Rossino's family member into this political debate and owned it and said, oh, my emotions got the best of me. We've seen Superintendent Ryan Walters do similar things where he gets pretty emotional. Emergency press, you know, press briefings and like sending all this stuff that's like just dripping, right? Like heavily tinged in emotion. And who is not getting ugly about this is like, I don't know, Representative Provenzano, who ran the expansion of, you know, breast cancer screening bill that was passed overwhelmingly in both chambers and then vetoed for like a ridiculous reason by the governor. He was just, you know, leaning, like giving a handout to the insurance industry. And she could have got, I don't know, she could have gone off a different direction. She didn't. She took a very professional approach. And then at the end of the day, got it through, right? Like they overrode the veto and she got a standing ovation by all of her peers because she did the right thing in the right way. So I don't know. I'm just like,
what a great story too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, I liked your phrase emoting all over democracy. I think there's something there, Andy.
Yeah. And this is not to say that emotions are bad, right? Like feelings, right. Just feelings. They're not good or bad. I'll put on my therapist hat, but I was
just about to ask you to put on your LPC hat.
Yeah.
And look at this from that lens. So I'm glad you got to the same place as I was.
Yeah. I mean, I think, especially in governing, right? Like emotion plays a role. Like there are bills that are deeply emotional for legislators, for members of Congress, for the president, presumably, and for us, for constituents, right? There are bills that I care a lot about. There are ones I care about intellectually for political reasons or policy reasons. And there's ones I care about for like, they affect my family, right? The breast cancer screening bill is one of those. The other bill that finally passed this year bans corporal punishment of students with disabilities. That was Senate Bill 364, finally passed this year. In the debate around that, you know, it was definitely like elicited an emotional response from me. But I took a good effort to not like go online and just start like shitting on legislators, right, about it. Like,
yeah.
It's not the feeling itself isn't good or bad, but it's like what you do with it can be, we'll say, healthy or unhealthy.
That's what I was going to say. You know, having an emotional response in politics is not unusual. Everybody has strong feelings, strong opinions. We fan those flames a lot. Certainly, it's an area ripe for righteous indignation often. What we shouldn't do is have grown adults having temper tantrums on the internet. I'm going to keep coming back to my folks in my personal life have heard me say this many times, you and I have talked about it. I want to come back to like, make the government smart again. I want adults in the room again. Yes. There are adults in the room at the White House. Can you imagine what they are thinking as they are watching this unfold? The people who just have a regular job, or the journalists, to your point, who didn't go to school for this.
Right.
Yep.
Well, I mean, this at the White House, this really kicked off because Elon Musk took a public oppositional stance to Trump's
big, beautiful bill.
Yeah. I don't want to call it that because it's not beautiful, right? Like, we may say it with sarcasm.
It's a big, bad bill.
Yeah, it's a big, it's going to do horrendous things to our national budget and the national deficit.
And programs like SNAP and Medicaid.
Yeah, say that again.
Catastrophic cuts to programs like SNAP and Medicaid.
And, yeah, exactly right. And when we talk about the state budget, that's the kind of behavior at the federal level that is going to impact Oklahoma's state budget. And, I said it last week, I'll say it again, like the tax cut bill that the governor passed here. And I guarantee I would lay money on the odds that in 5 years, the legislature is going to be in a pickle because they're going to not have enough money to meet the obligations. And then what are they going to do? It's almost impossible to raise taxes in this state. And that's why we try to caution against cutting them in this way.
And it wasn't all that long ago that we had $1 billion shortfall at the state and all the teachers walked out and services were shutting down. Have folks forgotten?
Yeah.
This is foreseeable. This is a problem we could see coming when you cut taxes that deeply. Yep.
And this is the third time that they've done it this way, right? Like the other two times they had to come back and fix it. And I won't be at all surprised when they do it here. But again, also when we know that there's this massive amount of uncertainty or instability at the federal level that is going to impact the state, we've got some money in savings, so it's not going to be devastating right away. So maybe we've got 1 year, right, or two that we could fill in some gaps and then try to build a political fix to it. But I really do worry about where the state's going to be in 5 or 6 years. It won't be Governor Stitt.
Well, and if do you mind if I talk a moment about what's in the big, beautiful bill that's moving through the Senate?
Sure. Why not?
It has some pretty specific implications for this budget, should it pass in its current form. So part of the budget reconciliation package that passed the United States House of Representatives and is now under consideration includes a provision called cost shifting for both SNAP and Medicaid. So SNAP and Medicaid are two federal programs that are quite expensive, and they provide critical services to tens of millions of people. Those benefits are paid for federally. Part of this provision would cost shift some of the cost of those benefits to states. States like Oklahoma do not have money laying around to suddenly start providing SNAP benefits or paying for Medicaid.
Right.
So it really is an existential threat to those two programs. And it's also at the state level, regardless of your feelings about those programs or your sort of partisan opinions about those two programs, from a state budgetary level, this should be raising 10 fire alarms because Oklahoma and most other states do not have lots of extra money laying around to start paying $500 million a year towards SNAP.
Right. No. And, or to Medicaid expansion, right? We're one of three states that when we expanded Medicaid because it came from the people, it's in the Constitution that requires the legislature to fund it. And if the feds pull out, that formula doesn't work anymore. And suddenly we're on the hook for that extra money. And they estimate it's about another $500 million there. So between Medicaid and SNAP, that's a billion bucks a year. That's a big hole to fill.
Aside from all the other, tight spots in the state budget, now you just have to come up with extra money that's not there.
Right. You know, the old joke, right? A billion here, a billion there. Pretty soon it starts adding up to real money.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, gosh, I don't... Effie, for you as a woman, especially a woman who works in and around advocacy and government your whole career, you've done everything from grassroots advocacy to state and federal level work. Knowing that all the data is clear. You come in at a pay difference from your male counterparts. You have to, society expects you to prove yourself in different ways than like I have to, I would assume. What's it like for you then to see the governor of a state, the state superintendent, the president, the head of major corporations being openly petty in this way on the national stage?
It's incredibly frustrating. I don't know if Let's Pod This listeners know, but I got doged out of USDA. And so I've been on the job market the last couple of months. And as a relatively young woman, I have a healthy dose of imposter syndrome, as most young women do, thinking about what types of jobs to apply for. Am I qualified? Can I do it? How do I have to show up? I got to show up 10 times more qualified to get the same interview often. So it's incredibly frustrating to see powerful men whose decisions have implications for the entire global economy, state economy, every single facet of our lives, just having an absolute toddler-style meltdown of entitlement. It's insane. It's so frustrating.
Do you think, not to put you on the spot too much, but like, if this conversation, if it was reported that this is what happened in the Oval Office, but it wasn't just playing out on Twitter, like to know that it happened versus seeing it happen, does that feel different to you as a citizen and as a woman?
It feels different and both more immature, right? We all, the founders of our country used to fight with each other, but it was much more distinguished than this. They would send us a strongly worded letter, this is just silly. And I'm sure the reason that all the comedians and late night hosts and everybody's just having a field day with it is because it's silly. There's nothing else to do but just laugh. I'm also a mom of very young kids. And so has anybody checked to make sure that Trump and Elon don't just need a snack? is somebody just tired?
Maybe they're just hangry, and that's why.
Yeah.
That's funny. That may be true. It felt like it was yesterday afternoon. Maybe they just needed a Snickers bar or something.
And some low-level patriotic staffer in the White House just come in with like a bag of chips and see if that helps. It's not going to make it worse.
Right. Right. That's real funny. I hadn't even thought about it in those terms. And I mean, there may be certainly, the reporting about Elon and his substance abuse is pretty well documented, and that could play a role in this. Who knows? I didn't even know about him being in the Oval Office with a black eye until I was reading about this Twitter spat. And I was like, why does he have a black eye? Apparently his kid punched him, which
it's happens. Just all so silly.
It is. Yeah. Lots of questions there.
Yeah.
I don't know what to say about this. I mean, hopefully this blows over in a way that doesn't have long-term consequences for our country, right? Like, there are big stakes here, right, on both sides. I think, and this is just a guess, but like, I believe the president, I think they might make up, and here's why: because they both have something to gain and to lose from this. The president wants Elon's money, right? He wants him to invest in candidates, because Elon could go out and fund anti-Trump candidates, right? And with his war chest of his personal wealth, that could be something that would tip things away from Trump's hand. So it certainly wants to shore that up, and then Elon, in order to maintain his wealth, needs his companies to continue to receive billions of dollars of federal contracts, right? Like, they are, SpaceX functions as America's only like real reliable transportation to and from space right now. Plus all the money for electric vehicles and all that stuff. So I think they both have some, they have more to lose from like having this totally fall apart. But also I think they both are, as you said earlier, like megalomaniacs who feel like they're above reproach and might not want to answer to anybody, including each other.
Yeah. I saw part of the headline in the Washington Post this morning was that this very public fallout has pretty serious risk implications for things like defense and what the Pentagon does. And, you know, so there are some, this is not all funny, right? There's some serious implications here. The government has been kneecapped by Elon Musk's efforts. And meanwhile, there's serious world leaders, I'm sure, watching this happen. I heard somebody say, you know, what if China just comes in and says, all right, you guys, we're going to take over here. Clearly, there are no adults left in the room. Right. We will help you out and just take over. And I said, yeah, that might not be the worst idea at this point, you know?
Right. Yeah, gosh. Well, I mean,
can you imagine what all the other world leaders are thinking watching this play out?
Oh, yeah. I'm sure they're appalled and also understanding that this is exactly what they thought was going to happen, right? Like the details of Trump's meeting with the German chancellor the other day were pretty sobering yet again. I mean, it was just him kind of talking for an hour and the German leader kind of looking at him being like, have you ever read a book or like looked at history? Because like what you're saying is like not remotely true or accurate. And the parts that are factual are wrong, right? And so he's just like saying, oh my God. It's like being a part of a group project and your group is presenting and you're like, they didn't do anything. Like they don't know what they're talking about. And you realize that like just by being there, you feel dumber, I think.
Yeah. And you know, and meanwhile, this actual threat to programs that affect tens of millions of people in our country is moving through Congress.
Yeah.
And this big public fight between the president and Elon Musk is distracting from attention on that. And you know, I don't know how the Senate's going to end up voting or what a final budget bill ends up looking like, but there's serious stuff still happening because the business of governing is still serious, despite how silly it's all become.
Yeah, exactly right. And as you said earlier, like as someone who got doged out of the federal workforce, it's really frustrating to see the guy whose fault it is getting kicked out too. And like we know that, you know, whatever he promised, he did not deliver. The actual savings to Americans are like, we all are saving like 7 cents a year or something now. And that means that he effectively kneecapped tons of federal agencies that have real world implications. And then they just kick him out. But I guarantee there's not going to be any conversation about, you know, we should like rehire all those people and like get back to where we were. Cause that's not what they're about.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, that's right. I did think of something that I can't remember what somebody said recently about Elon and, it was that, you know, Doge started off with this sort of idea of the boogeyman of the lazy Fed, the federal worker who doesn't do any work. And then through his efforts, they've actually created this person.
Yeah.
I am now a federal employee who gets paid every single day by the taxpayer to not do my job.
Right. The deferred resignation thing.
Yep. Yep. So all of that to say, this is fascinating to watch both as a citizen and a longtime student of American democracy. It's sobering and it's sinister, but man, there's a lot of good jokes to be made if you're in the funny mood on a Friday afternoon.
That's right. The times were bad, but the memes were good, as they say.
Yeah, that's right. The times are bad, but the memes are good.
Gosh. All right. Yep. Well, Effie, I know you're on your way to a weekend vacation, so I appreciate you taking the time to visit today. Always good to see your face. You have to come back when you're in town and come on the show in person here in the Democracy Den, and we can have a real conversation about something.
I would love to visit the Democracy Den and be a guest on Let's Pod This Again soon.
Anytime. You've got my number.
All right. Talk to you soon. Thanks, Andy.
Bye, Effie.
Bye.
All right, friends. Well, the other thing I want to highlight this week is just to put on your radar some upcoming events that we are hosting. As we have discussed ad nauseum over the last couple of months, the legislature passed Senate Bill 1027, which just decimates the state's initiative petition process and makes it really, really difficult. Two signs for hope here. One, it sounds like from the news stories, there's likely going to be a lawsuit to challenge it. And I am very optimistic that they will be successful. Several elements of this bill appear to be unconstitutional in ways that have already been deemed unconstitutional for previous bills. So they've made the same mistake again. Hopefully that goes in our favor and that a majority, if not all of the bill, gets set aside as unconstitutional and basically like does not go into effect. Regardless, if that does or doesn't, the initial petition process still exists. And that means we have a very narrow window of time to mount a very massive campaign to reform the initial petition process. This is a wholesale change, right? Right now, the process is some of it's in the Constitution, some of it's in statute, like the regular laws. And the legislature has access to make these kinds of changes to it. And what we can do is we can run a constitutional amendment, like an initiative petition about initiative petitions, and to fix the system, to rewrite it in the way that it's intended from the get-go, right, by the framers of our Constitution, in a way that works for people to be able to use it as their constitutional right here in Oklahoma. This won't be easy. This won't be cheap. But boy, howdy, it is worth it, right? So if you are upset about the politicians who have voted repeatedly over the last decade or more to restrict your rights, your right to initiate petition, I need your help. We are going to hold, I've got three town hall meetings scheduled, virtual town hall meetings. We're going to do them on Zoom, two in the evening, one like at lunchtime. That's what I've got planned for the next couple of weeks. We're going to keep doing more, but I only planned out a couple of weeks. Summertime is, uncertain for lots of folks, but in each of those meetings, the agenda is the same. We're going to talk, do some education about the initiative petition process. We're going to talk about how it works, talk about what doesn't work about it. We're going to talk about how it looks in the light of this new law, and also what happens if this law doesn't go through. And then we're going to have an open discussion about what we think it should look like, right? Regardless of what it is today, what should it look like and how can we get there? And that's the part, especially, I need you there. I mean, I need you there because we need as many people to be knowledgeable about the initial petition. And I need you to come learn and to take the information we give you and hold similar meetings in your circle of influence with your friends, with your colleagues at your church or your soccer team or your Rotary Club or whatever. But we need to very quickly because not everybody listens to, local political podcasts. Not everybody reads the news all that often, but we need people to know that the ability to have ballot initiatives, right? State questions on the ballot is in jeopardy in a major way, and we have to get together. The price tag on this is huge, right? Right now it's small because we're just doing education, but should this escalate to the point we're actually filing something, and we're not there yet for sure, but a ballot initiative campaign in Oklahoma is going to cost $8 million, $10 million to get there. I'm confident we can raise the money. There are, organizations and folks that have deeper pockets than I do that I think would be willing to support it. But first, we have to show them that this is something Oklahomans want. And the best way to bring down the cost of a campaign is to run a really great grassroots education effort to get everybody on board, right? If we're going to have to contend with more difficult signature collection standards, then we have to have a robust volunteer effort. We have to have people ready to go all across the state, and that's you. So please come to one of our three upcoming virtual town halls. They're going to be on Thursday, June 12th at 7 p.m. There is not a Thunder game. That's next Thursday. There's not a Thunder game that night. It's in between games, so please put on your calendar. The following Tuesday, which will be June 17th at 7 p.m. again, and then Thursday, June 19th at noon. Those are the three. You can go to our website, letsfixthis.org. They're on there. If you get our emails or see our social media, they're going to be on there as well. Please register it. You got to register to come so we can get your email address and make sure you stay in the loop. Please come. Come with your thinking hats on. We want to hear from you about how you think the system could be designed to be better, right? It's not going to, we want to be more in line with the rest of the states that have the initiative petition. We want it to be reasonable and accessible to everybody. This is not a partisan issue. This is a power issue. The legislature has the power. We have some power and they're trying to take ours, right? And we need to reclaim it and hold on to it and make sure they can't keep trying to take it away. All right, friends, that's where we're at. So that's it for today. Remember, boy howdy, decisions are made by those who show up. Three chances, June 12th, June 17th, June 19th. Come to one of those. Please tell your friends, spread it around. I think my Zoom account can have 300 people on there. You know, let's go. Let's fill it out. Let's make this. If it gets that big, we're going to do breakout rooms or something, but we can have a good discussion about this to build some consensus. We really need your input. I appreciate your time. I appreciate your consideration. If you can't make one of those events, send me an email or just wait longer and we'll do more. If you know that you want to host a meeting like that and you've got some people, you know, maybe you have a book club and you want someone to come talk, let me know. We'll make it happen. And if you are already sold, you're on board and you say, you know, how else can I help? Donate, right? Please donate. If you can sign up for $10 a month, just a recurring $10 a month, that's cheaper than Netflix. It goes a long way. Like my goal is to get just 500 people to donate 10 bucks a month, right? That would allow me to hire a couple of part-time staffers to help run all these things because we're going to have to be doing this all across the state. If you can give 25 bucks a month, right? If democracy is as important to you as Netflix, please make that donation. Go to our website, letsfixthis.org/donate. And you can set it up as a recurring donation right there. It's super easy. I appreciate you so much. All right. Enjoy the sunshine. Watch out for the storms. And I'll talk to you next week.